What's up, everyone? This is Anthony Pompliano. Most of you know me as Pomp. You're listening to the Pomp Podcast, simply the best podcast out there. Now let's kick this thing off.
Dr. Munib Ali is the co-founder of Stacks, a platform to build smart contracts on top of Bitcoin. In this conversation, we discuss Bitcoin, smart contracts, decentralization, financial services, Miami Coin, and why distributed networks are so important. I really enjoyed this conversation with Munib, as always, and I hope you do as well. Before we get into this episode, though, I want to quickly talk about our sponsors. First up is Circle. Circle's a global financial technology firm that enables businesses of all sizes to harness the power of stablecoins and public blockchains for payments, commerce, and financial applications worldwide. Circle is also a principal developer of USD Coin, or USDC, which is the fastest growing regulated fully reserved dollar stablecoin in the world, now standing at more than $30 billion in market cap and adding nearly $300 million of net new digital dollars in circulation every single week. The free Circle account and suite of platform API services bridge the gap between traditional payments and crypto for trading, DeFi, and NFT marketplaces. You can learn more by going to circle.com. I've had Jeremy Allaire, the CEO of Circle, on the podcast numerous times, and I'm a big fan of their vision, and you can't deny how fast that USD coin is growing. So go check them out at circle.com and let me know what you think. Next up is crypto.com. They're helping to mainstream the crypto industry by signing major global partnerships with multiple sports, including Series A, the Italian Football League, the UFC, and my personal favorite, Formula One. With over 10 million users around the world, Crypto.com offers an easy way to buy and sell more than 100 cryptocurrencies. You can even buy Bitcoin with as little as $1. New users enjoy a 0% credit and debit card fees in their first 30 days. Crypto.com also pays some of the most competitive interest rates in the industry. You can find out how much you can earn by visiting Crypto.com. Crypto.com is also Visa's biggest crypto card partner. My listeners across North America, Europe, and most of APAC can apply for the Slick Metal card, offering up to 8% back on most purchases. And it comes with amazing perks, like 100% rebate for your Netflix, Spotify, and Amazon Prime subscriptions. Get $25 when you download the Crypto.com app today using the code POMP. Again, $25 when you download the Crypto.com app today using code POMP. Go check it out and let me know how you see that Crypto.com app working. They've made a bunch of improvements, so I'm excited to hear what you guys all think about it. Last but not least is LMAX Digital. They're the number one institutional crypto exchange. They offer clients the deepest pool of crypto liquidity on the planet, underscored by 100% uptime track record through volatility spikes. Leveraging LMAX Group's liquidity relationships and ultra-low latency technology, LMAX Digital is the market-leading solution for institutional crypto trading and custodial services. They feature a central limit order book streaming spot Bitcoin, Ether, Litecoin, and Bitcoin Cash. And it's all paired with US dollars, euro, and yen. LMAX Digital, the number one institutional crypto exchange. They're secure, they're liquid, and they're trusted. You can learn more at lmaxdigital.com/pomp. Again, lmaxdigital.com/pomp. All right, let's get in this episode with Munib. Hope you guys enjoy this one.
Anthony Pompliano runs Pomp Investments. All views of him and the guests on his podcast are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Pomp Investments. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Pomp or his guests as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his personal opinion. This podcast is for informational purposes only.
All right, guys. Bang, bang. I've got Munib here with me. Thank you so much for doing this, my friend.
Always great to chat with you, man.
Of course. Let's just jump right in. There's plenty of people who have heard of smart contracts on Bitcoin, decentralized finance on Bitcoin, city coins on Bitcoin, all kinds of stuff that now seems to be being built on Bitcoin, all being empowered by Stacks, which is a platform that really has brought smart contracts to Bitcoin and kind of empowered this entire ecosystem. So can you start with just reminding everyone what Stacks is and how exactly this works?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think Stacks is smart contracts for Bitcoin. And when I use the wordings like for Bitcoin, like I use it very carefully because these are not smart contracts literally built on Bitcoin. Everyone knows that Bitcoin has a limited scripting language and making changes to Bitcoin is something that the community doesn't like, or it's not a good design decision anyway, because you want your money layer to be very stable, very durable, and you want it to have a very small attack vector. You actually don't want the fully expressive smart contract languages on the Bitcoin layer, right? So Stax is a separate layer. Some people think of that as almost like a layer 1.5. It's not really a full layer 2. It's not really a separate layer 1. It's a very unique design. Think of that as a blockchain that's kind of like connecting to Bitcoin, and it has consensus between Bitcoin and Stax. So really, like, you can simplify it as a smart contract layer where these contracts can read state from Bitcoin. They can react to that state. You can write interesting applications where, you know, part of your application is running on Bitcoin, part of it is using the smart contracts on the Stax side. And the mainnet for Stax went live in January of this year. And I think we have seen a tremendous amount of like interest from developers. I think there's something like 30 independent companies and startups at various different stages. They're now building the ecosystem. You mentioned, you know, city coins. The city of Miami has actually accepted a treasury of a new type of asset called Miami Coin, which is built on top and was launched in a pure mining launch. There's more than $500 million of value locked in a smart contract, in one of the smart contracts on Stax. So I think it is relatively early in terms of traction, but I feel like for the 6-7 months that the network has been live after mainnet, we have seen tremendous growth as well.
One of the parts of this that's so fascinating is the idea of expanding the Bitcoin economy. And I think historically people have thought of Bitcoin as a decentralized digital currency. And there's an importance to all three of those words, right? Decentralized, digital, and a currency. But you've got this point around most of the financial services or the infrastructure around Bitcoin is centralized. So you essentially have a decentralized currency with centralized infrastructure. You and the rest of the folks working on this seem to be trying to change that. So maybe describe how you look at this and then what exactly it means to expand the Bitcoin economy.
Yes. So I think, like, I'm an early Bitcoiner. I kind of like entered the space in 2013. And in one way or the other, I've been actually building on Bitcoin since then. We've tried building applications directly on top of Bitcoin. We've experienced firsthand some of the scalability stuff that people talk about, or why Bitcoin is designed the way it is designed. So Stax is actually a result of like years and years of work and actually building interesting things on top of Bitcoin. And the motivation for a lot of things that we've been doing is driven by exactly what you mentioned, that we view Bitcoin as the best money layer. It has all the right properties. Like, people know the exact supply. We know the supply is not going to change. We know that it was launched in a fair mining-only launch. It has a grassroots community. It has a big kind of like, you know, brand and recognition around the world. And it is viewed as this hard asset, right? Like, it's like the decentralized money layer. But interestingly, you would want to use the decentralized money in all sorts of decentralized applications, or even have trading. Let's take an example. Let's look at, you know, some of the trading volumes for Bitcoin. You go to CoinMarketCap, you try to take a look at, you know, where does Bitcoin trade? It would be Binance, Coinbase, FTX, and some of the highest volumes will be against stable coins like, you know, USDC or Tether. So that actually like feels strange, but a lot of people have just gotten so used to it that I have my decentralized money, and the way I'm going to trade it is against an asset on a centralized exchange. Whereas if you had smart contracts around Bitcoin, you could have things like USDC. By the way, USDC has announced that they are coming to the Stax layer, meaning that you will literally have USDC available on Stax. And developers have built native swaps, meaning that you could do a swap between BTC and USDC by sending a pure Bitcoin transaction. So my question to Bitcoiners is that, do you think that swapping into USDC is better if you can do a multi-sig transaction on from your hardware wallet as a pure Bitcoin transaction and then get USDC versus for sending your Bitcoin to a centralized exchange and then trading it there and then withdrawing your funds from a centralized exchange? I think most people or Bitcoiners would pick that. No, I love the decentralized way of doing it. I don't have to go through KYC. I don't have to take any, you know, third-party risk of there's a custodian or there's an exchange that can get hacked and so on and so forth, right? What, like, the interesting thing that I've noticed is they're intellectually aligned. Their values are aligned with this type of decentralized infrastructure, but we don't see a lot of kind of like momentum or development in the Bitcoin community to actually build these services, right? Like, there obviously are some projects, but in the grand scheme of things, most of these DeFi primitives are actually being built outside of Bitcoin. And I think that's the thing that motivates us, like people in the Stacks ecosystem, that we want to bring like all those primitives directly to the Bitcoin ecosystem.
When you think about building decentralized infrastructure around a decentralized currency, is that the only way that this will all be successful? Or is there a world where you could have decentralized infrastructure and a centralized currency, or you could have a decentralized currency and centralized infrastructure? Like, does it have to be decentralized, vertically integrated infrastructure and currency? Or is there another path that that may also be successful? Like, how exclusive is that strategy?
Yeah, I do think that what we're seeing right now is decentralized money, Bitcoin, working on centralized infrastructure. It's kind of like working, for the most part, like working quite fine. Obviously, there are problems with exchanges and people kind of like learn their lessons and so on. And interestingly, then we're seeing use cases, and I wouldn't name projects, which are more centralized with these decentralized infrastructure. And that's actually leading to some new types of use cases that I would love to see happen in the Bitcoin ecosystem. So I think those experiments are actually showing the path to what's possible if you enable kind of like more decentralized types of services. Like, a good example would be, you know, do you want to put your Bitcoin as collateral for some sort of a stable asset? And actually, you know, you send a transaction, you put up your Bitcoin as collateral, and you can mint some sort of a stable currency and then go and use it. Like, that's like saying, don't sell your Bitcoin, use it as a collateral to get a stable asset that it can use and do it that way. I think, again, Bitcoiners would be, they would like it in theory, but for several reasons, like this idea of actually building this stuff natively in the Bitcoin ecosystem doesn't get enough attention. In terms of like what's better, I definitely think that if you start with a centralized layer, it's very hard to build decentralized components on top of it. It kind of like, you know, defeats the purpose. But if you start with a decentralized layer, then you can keep adding more decentralized building blocks, and you can always build more centralized services on top of it. And that's why I get attracted to building a Bitcoin, because let's say for some reason people want like faster transactions or whatever, you can add a layer like on top of Stacks even. So Stacks is a more decentralized smart contract layer that gives you faster transactions, and people can use it if they want to, right? But you can't go the other way around. You can't start off with a centralized base layer, and then you're limited. You can't build a more decentralized thing on top of a more centralized thing.
And so when you think about this, there's a couple of different ways that smart contracts can work. One of them, obviously, is the on-chain smart contracts that most people are familiar with from the smart contract platforms. The other is something that's more akin to an off-chain type smart contract. Maybe give us an overview of what are the two different types, how they work, and what exactly Stacks is doing and why that's important.
Yep. So I think the way to think about this is like on-chain contracts are effectively something that are literally running at the blockchain level. So these things are always online. Anyone can interact with these contracts whenever they want, and they are almost like networked together, right? So they are like these Lego blocks that people can use to build other services as well, right? So I'll give you an example. If there is a Uniswap, which is like a, you know, it's an automated market maker. Most people think of that as a decentralized exchange. It exposes certain functionality, and then people can use that functionality automatically in other smart contracts to then glue together the functionality and build other interesting things, right? So for that, you kind of like need to be on chain. You need to be networked together and be global. So these are kind of like the smart contracts that most new blockchains, like I know there are a bunch of like new layer one blockchains out in the market now, when people talk about smart contracts, they're talking about these on-chain fully featured smart contracts. And then there are, obviously, Bitcoin has a more limited scripting language. It's on-chain, the Bitcoin script, but it is fairly limited for security reasons, right? So people have come up with this second form of smart contracts, which are off-chain, meaning that a lot of the state is off-chain, or maybe you need to talk to people before doing a transaction with them. You have to basically coordinate with them, set up a transaction. So the examples for these types of languages or approaches would be DLCs that are actually quite popular in Bitcoin communities, at least the idea of it. And RGB, which is a project in the Lightning community, which is also approaching smart contracts from a off-chain component. And I think the main reason these approaches are off-chain is because you can't modify Bitcoin. So if Bitcoin has a more limited scripting language, you're trying to add this functionality in an off-chain manner. And what a lot of people don't realize, and this is where I wish that, you know, people can be better educated about these things. Like, personally, I think these approaches are great, and they bring, you know, new use cases to Bitcoin, and they should definitely be explored. But we should realize the limitations here as well. You cannot build a full-fledged DeFi ecosystem using these approaches because they're very limited. You can't have smart contracts that are online all the time that you can interact with in a permissionless manner. Like, some of the UX of using a DLC actually looks like you are coordinating with the party you want to transact with offline. You're signing like 10 different potential transactions, or maybe there's an Oracle involved, and then you're manually broadcasting them. It's very clunky. And I think you can't expect the type of functionality from a modern smart contract language and confuse that with a DLC or RBG type approach. So what we did at Stacks is, like, our motivation was to bring fully featured smart contracts as people have come to experience them in the previous years, and try to bring that functionality to Bitcoin. And to do that, that's why Stacks is a separate smart contract layer. It's almost like a blockchain itself. I call it like layer 1.5. And you get the full featured smart contracts there. People can build the automated market makers, the lending protocols, NFTs, like all these types of different features that you've seen in crypto. Now that's possible because of the fully featured smart contracts that Stacks is bringing to Bitcoin.
When you think about what this empowers, obviously DeFi on Bitcoin is a huge component of it. Do you see this being able to create feature parity between the smart contract platforms and now on top of Bitcoin? Or would there be some difference in functionality or features?
Yes. So I think when we were starting off, so obviously we wanted to be very careful about security. We were dealing with some unique type of constraints because you can't change Bitcoin, right? So we had to make all the changes on the Stacks layer. And we came up with this programming language called Clarity. It's not Turing complete like the Solidity language that is being used on Ethereum, mostly for security, right? So think of that as a slightly limited subset of a full Turing complete language, but it gives you a lot of security benefits. And interestingly, so far, working with like a ton of developers and so many startups that are building on Stacks, we haven't encountered a single use case that you can't implement with Clarity on Stacks that you can implement on Ethereum. So in terms of like feature parity, it's literally like anything you can do on Ethereum, anything you can do on another, you know, newer L1 blockchain, you can literally implement that in this smart contract layer, which is amazing. I was actually quite pleasantly surprised to find that, because I thought maybe Clarity would be limiting in certain ways because we focus so much on security. But it turns out that it's basically a decidable language, meaning that if your program is decidable, like you know what the program is going to do, you can express it in the language. And by the way, it's a good thing. You should know what your program should do if you're writing a smart contract, right? So that turned out to be a really, really good feature.
When you think about Clarity, is this something that most developers can immediately just pick up and start to code in? Or is it something similar to Solidity where they actually have to go and become somewhat specialized in it?
Yeah, so I think there's always a learning curve, right? So if you want to write a smart contract and you're a developer, there's always going to be a learning curve to understanding I'll separate those things into two. One is the syntax of the language, like, you know, how JavaScript has a different syntax from, let's say, C. But then the other thing is the new concepts that you have for smart contracts, like how you interact with the blockchain, how you have these unique type of things that only smart contracts have and not normal programs don't have that. So I think Clarity has both types of learning curves, right? You are learning about smart contracts and how they work, but you're also learning a new syntax as well. And in Clarity's case, the syntax is actually very similar to Lisp. So a bunch of people who like programming in Lisp, like they're diehard fans of it, we mostly did it for security reasons. I think our lens on all of this is that the number one feature you should be optimizing for is safety and security. Like, it's not about speed, it's not about ease of programming, it's mostly about how secure our smart contract is going to be. And in our case, you can have mathematical proofs of correctness that the program is only going to do what it's supposed to do, and it won't do anything else.
When you think about the DeFi capabilities, I think the promise of decentralized finance is that you can do obviously transactions in a decentralized manner, or payments. You can do buying and selling on decentralized exchanges. You can do decentralized lending. You can do pretty much anything you can do in the legacy financial system in the decentralized manner now. Is that ultimately what can get accomplished here? Like, do we think we can reach a fully decentralized financial system where the infrastructure is built on top of and around Bitcoin? Or will we have to rely on other blockchains or some sort of interoperability? Like, how do you view kind of dependence on other things versus the ability to build a fully decentralized financial system exclusively on top of and around Bitcoin?
Yeah, let me separate two things there. So one is about the decentralized economy itself. And sometimes, like, I'm talking to my friends on Wall Street, and the way I describe this is, what if I tell you that I could give you better insights into the type of risk that exists in the various systems that are hooked up on Wall Street? Like, the answer to that is 1,000% yes. Every single analyst, every single trader wants to know the type of risks that they're trading against or the products that they're building, right? And the superpower of DeFi is that that risk could be fully transparent, meaning that you can actually analyze every single collateral, every single assumption, every single piece of code that is there. And I think that's kind of like the real superpower of DeFi. And we have actually seen it work. Like, imagine that, let's say 4 or 5 months ago, when there was a 38% correction in the market, the DeFi protocols actually worked as expected, right? Like, people were liquidated, like, those liquidations closed. Obviously, prices came down, but it wasn't a catastrophic failure of the system where the system just came to a halt, which is what would happen on Wall Street if a correction like that was to happen, because there are so many black boxes. There's so many kind of like human relationships. Like, if you talk to some of the Wall Street insiders, they would tell you war stories about, you know, the market crash like 6% and how they were making phone calls to cover like their friends' investments and whatnot, right? Like, none of that exists in DeFi. Like, it's all automated. It's all computer code. It has full visibility. So I think in that sense, like, this is purely from a risk perspective and transparency perspective, a strictly better system than what exists in Wall Street. And I think, like, that it's just open source code, and it is evolving so quickly. Like, it's pretty much like writing is on the wall that this is going to happen. And then the question becomes, like, what role is Bitcoin going to play in this, right? And I think Bitcoin has a huge role to play here. Like, Bitcoin obviously is the best, most secure financial asset. Like, it's the store of value that it's the durable store of value that everyone can really depend upon. But you want to make Bitcoin productive, meaning that like, if you think about traditional assets, the dollar has value because the dollar is the thing that everything trades against, right? The dollar is the thing in which people want to put up their collateral. And I think Bitcoin community should actually think of Bitcoin as that asset, that it should really power the world of DeFi, like, in the sense that assets should trade against Bitcoin, because any value that these assets have, it should be measured against Bitcoin. Like, if I'm trading something against Bitcoin, then Bitcoin is the unit of measurement, right? Bitcoin is the reserve asset against which everything trades. Bitcoin is the default asset where you use it for putting up collateral and so on. And interestingly, like Bitcoin obviously is such a powerful asset that people are trying to pull Bitcoin into their ecosystem. And they're trying to do that by wrapped assets, which could be custodial or could be a little bit more decentralized way of like issuing these assets as well. But that's not native to Bitcoin, right? Like you're effectively taking Bitcoin and you're issuing some sort of a derived Bitcoin asset on another blockchain, and you're inheriting all of the potential security issues of that separate system versus bringing the ability to have DeFi to Bitcoin directly. And I think, by the way, it's not just DeFi either. Like smart contracts enable any type of applications that people might be interested in. And I think NFTs could be a great example because they took off recently. Like imagine what's the value in an NFT? I'm not going to get into the debates about, you know, you can copy the JPEG or something. I think people have exhausted all of that. But if you look at fundamentally why an NFT has value, it has value because you can prove the ownership and you can prove the provenance of that asset, that hey, it traded at this price, at this date, and here's the full history of it. Like what is a better source of ownership and provenance than Bitcoin, right? So if you're minting these NFTs on Bitcoin, and you don't have to store that data in Bitcoin. Bitcoin is just seeing hashes when people are doing things on stacks, right? But you can actually mint interesting artwork using Bitcoin block data. There's even a video game, people should go check it out. It's called Moonray, where land in the game is actually defined by the scarcity of the Bitcoin blocks. And you can have these generative art that is created within a game based on Bitcoin blocks, right? And imagine how rare a Bitcoin block is. And if you're creating artwork inside a video game that is based on a particular Bitcoin block, the Bitcoin block is never going to repeat again in history. So just as a historical artifact, that art generative artwork is going to be valuable. So I think tying all of this back to the abilities we already have with Bitcoin actually makes use cases like DeFi, like NFT, even better than what we see out in the market. And obviously it expands the Bitcoin economy because then Bitcoin will be used to do auctions of these NFTs, to support kind of like, you know, secondary markets for these types of assets. The more application people are able to build around Bitcoin, the more valuable Bitcoin is going to be, right? And I feel like for some reason over the past couple of years, I've been in the Bitcoin community long enough that I think back in 2013, 2014, people are actually much more open to building more applications around Bitcoin. I feel like during the ICO craze of like 2017 or so, we have just developed like such a negative reaction to all types of applications that the narrative has somehow become leave Bitcoin as a store of value. We don't care about any applications, no DeFi, no NFTs. And I think that attitude in the Bitcoin community can result in kind of like not unlocking the full potential of Bitcoin, which in my view, we unlock that by building like all sorts of applications and all sorts of different innovative things directly in the Bitcoin ecosystem.
Talk to me about city coins. That seems like another really interesting kind of use case here where for those that don't know, city coins essentially is the idea that a local municipality is able to leverage this brand new type of mechanism and generate yield for themselves that they can claim. And the city of Miami recently is the first city to go ahead and say, yes, we would like to participate in this. They received, I believe, over $5 million from the Miami coin, which is one of many city coins, and appears to kind of continue to be working for them. So maybe just describe, you know, how it works and then what you think about something like that being built on top of Bitcoin.
Yep. So I think, let me first describe Stacks and how it links with it, right? So Stacks, the asset, is a gas asset. So it doesn't compete with Bitcoin. Actually, it can't even exist if Bitcoin doesn't exist because the consensus works only with the Bitcoin blockchain itself. And even Stacks has value because it is a Bitcoin yielding asset. If you hold the gas token, which is Stacks, and you kind of like lock it up in a smart contract, you can earn Bitcoin from the protocol, right? And those earnings are around like 10%. And people are actually getting real Bitcoin transactions on the main Bitcoin chain as rewards. And I think that's like one of the native features of the gas asset, that it has a Bitcoin yield attached to it. And this idea of city coins, think of that as like a public-private partnership, that the city, because the city of Miami has now officially accepted the treasury, like obviously, you know, people can assume that they're taking this project more seriously and they would be willing to engage more with it, right? So the people who call it like, you know, the community of Miami, you don't have to be physically be in Miami, but have an interest in the city, and you hold the token that represents, you know, the community of Miami. And then there can be all sorts of different use cases of it, right? Like, for example, if let's say the mayor of Miami is making really good policies for the city and the city is actually growing, maybe there's more interest in Miami coin itself and people are actually buying it, right? Versus you could short like an SF coin if every time there's a bad kind of local policy decision. So it can almost work like as a futures market for that city, or that's kind of like my lens on it, like not the official thing. It's a very community-driven project. And I think the way the Citycoins project community kind of like described it, that it's really a way for the people to partner with the government, right? Because now the government is getting a slice of the treasury, and people can have a say in or start a conversation about what should they do with the funds. Like, for example, this part of the $5 million that were generated, maybe people want to see more crypto hackathons. Maybe they want to see like more applications being built, or more initiatives that brings kind of like, you know, more innovation to the city. And interestingly, let me tie this back to the yield I was talking about with Stacks. Like, because Stacks has a native Bitcoin yield, this asset that is built on Stacks is built in a way that it can also have a Bitcoin yield by proxy. So the city of Miami could actually decide that they just want to park their $5 million treasury. By the way, this treasury might keep growing, right? Because constantly when mining is happening for Miami coin, the size of the treasury is actually going up, because part of the mining proceeds are going into the treasury. But they could actually lock up the treasury and start earning a Bitcoin yield on it, right? Which is a very interesting way to introduce Bitcoin to a city government and kind of like put Bitcoin on their balance sheets.
What does it look like if they were to lock it up and earn yield? Like, is that yield single digit percentages like you would expect in the legacy world? Is it some of the, you know, crazy numbers that we saw in kind of the smart contract DeFi world, or somewhere in between?
It's 10% right now, right? So people can go to stacking.club to see that how the yield has performed over the last 6-7 months since the launch of Stacks, but it's hovering around 10%.
That's not bad at all compared to buying treasuries or whatever other options they would have in the legacy world.
Absolutely. It makes you wonder, like, you know, after experiencing some of the yields in crypto, like I look at my yields in the traditional bank, and I'm like, you know, someone is ripping you off, right?
Absolutely. When you think about kind of where all this is going, is it just more and more people building on top of Stacks and using the decentralized digital currency of Bitcoin and building decentralized infrastructure around it, and that's kind of the future, and let's just hand it over to as many people as possible and see what they can do with it? Or is there some other plan or hope for where this all goes?
I think one thing that I've noticed in the last 6 months or so is that I'm really excited about the interest in the developer communities, right? So developers are organically coming to this. They're really excited about this idea of making Bitcoin programmable, of expanding kind of like the Bitcoin economy. They get the value prop of Bitcoin, that, you know, Bitcoin is hard money, it's decentralized money layer, and they want to build interesting things around it. I think the work that we have done is resonating with developers. Like, I am still somewhat surprised, or like I don't fully get it, that in the broader Bitcoin community, there is still kind of like resistance to the idea that, hey, what is this separate layer? Why is there a separate gas asset? Even though we have baked in this functionality that people can even just do pure Bitcoin transactions and pay the gas fee in Bitcoin if they want to. It's available for a subset of functionality right now, but it can be expanded upon so that, you know, if you really want to pay gas fees in Bitcoin, you can do that. It's going to be a lot more expensive because block space on Bitcoin is much more expensive and you'll have to pay a much higher price versus paying the gas fee in a layer where the block space is not that expensive and you can actually pay a cheaper fee. But you can do that. And I do think like one of the things I would love to see in the coming months is more Bitcoiners kind of like opening up to the idea of applications being built on Bitcoin. And I think sometimes I see people criticizing Bitcoiners, like, hey, what do you even do with your Bitcoin other than hold it? And the reality is you can do a lot of things with your Bitcoin in a decentralized way. That functionality is here. Yes, it wasn't there like 3 years ago or 4 years ago, but as of this year, not just Stacks, I think there are other projects as well, and they're maturing and they're bringing these applications to Bitcoin. And the community actually embracing the movement for being a decentralization movement, not that, hey, I'm going to hold an asset and basically just sit on it. Like this movement is about like building an entire financial infrastructure or even non-financial use cases where you don't want to rely on companies and actually have this self-sovereign software that you use and you don't need anyone's permission to use. Like that's what people got into crypto for or got into Bitcoin for, right? So I feel like more of these use cases coming to Bitcoin and kind of like people actually utilizing these applications and even poking holes in them or improving them. It's all open source software, right? Like I'd love to see that more in the Bitcoin culture.
What are you most looking forward to? Like if there's one thing you're like, hey, I would love to see somebody go build this one thing or there's some milestone, what's the thing that you're looking for?
Yeah, so I had this idea of a Bitcoin lending application where your Bitcoin actually stays on the Bitcoin chain. So you could put up collateral in a smart contract on the Stacks layer, whereas your Bitcoin transaction, let's say that I wanted to borrow from you, right? So I would put up, let's say 200% collateral in a smart contract. You would send a Bitcoin transaction to me and then a clock starts on the loan. Let's say it's like, 150 blocks, which is like roughly a day. And if I don't give you the Bitcoin back plus interest, you automatically get the collateral, which is 200%. So you can go and buy more Bitcoin. I think an application like that could be super interesting because it is a completely trustless, decentralized way of lending out your Bitcoin and then earning an interest on it. And you're kind of like, you don't need to trust anyone. You just need to verify yourself that this smart contract is going to release the collateral to you if you don't get your Bitcoin back.
And so when you see that kind of playing out, the whole idea of Bitcoin as pristine collateral feels like that's something that Wall Street has really woken up to. Do you see the institutions coming in and using this, or is this more focused on retail and what I would call like Bitcoin-centric type companies?
Yeah, so I think right now, the people who are kind of like really using this stuff, like they are early adopters and they're just excited about the idea of these types of applications around Bitcoin, right? So there are people in our community. So I think of Stacks community as almost like either a subset or overlap with the Bitcoin community. I think most of the Stacks community members would like self-identify as Bitcoiners, but some of them are just developers who are here to build stuff and they don't have like strong views about anything. So that's where we are right now. I do think that more retail use might just naturally come first because these products are built by developers. They might be a little bit more clunky, at least initially, and so on. But I do agree that because Bitcoin has such wide adoption in the institutions, that we might actually start seeing more institutional adoption for some of these things, maybe even faster, versus compared that to a separate ecosystem, like they would actually have to try and convince the institutions to hold their token, right? Because Bitcoin is already kind of like accepted with so many institutions that you kind of like sidestep that step, which step might be like, a really big roadblock for more adoption of these applications in the wider institutional space.
Makes sense to me. I tend to think you're onto something, my friend. Where can people go learn more about Stacks or any of the infrastructure that's being built on and around it?
So best place would be stacks.co, which is like a community website for the open source project. It has links to a ton of other stuff. if you want to see like all the cool stuff that people are building, there's an independent accelerator that just had a demo day. You can follow them at Stax Startups. And they had 25 teams. I think I might have mentioned a bunch of them. This full RPG video game. There's like very interesting stuff around NFT marketplaces. There are new types of like stable coins that where the collateral can give you a Bitcoin yield. If you want to play around with some of these interesting things being built, go to at Stax Startups, and they have a list of like, you know, the companies that just came out literally like last week from their cohort one. So that'll be a great place to actually see what people are doing with the technology.
Awesome. And then where can they go follow you on Twitter?
So I am at Muneeb, which is my first name, M-U-N-E-E-B.
Got it. Listen, thank you so much for doing this. You guys have made a ton of progress since the last time we did this. And I think that it's pretty obvious the vision that you've had for this is coming together, and people are starting to build on it, people are starting to use it. So it'll be fun to do this again in the future as you guys continue progressing. And I'm obviously a big fan, so I'll be cheering you on as you do that.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me, man. Super excited.